the seriousness, my understanding is that the seriousness of education actually should be copied from you. The seriousness must be taken because of the initiative that comes from that particular side. Such that we then, or we are disappointed. You can't put it in other ways. Where you would be disappointed that the structure that we have, you know, we put our hope in you that for education to be taken seriously, you should be doing the same. Now, if you come here without the relevant document, timing, and timer, you do the same. We start to wonder just how serious it is. But we want to believe that I believe that you are very much, you are competent for the job. But is there any seriousness in what you're doing? Can you assure us that you are going to be more serious in the future? What were a little bit disappointed?
Can I think you expressed our sentiments and we happy with that. I need to just give apologies because obviously I've run out of time and I've got some urgent events to take care of. But at some point I'll run.
We can't see this, but if you want the very clear whether we'll see the report or not, I don't know. Look, we can receive it. For me, this is not an annual report, but I think Mr. Cavanda must understand that we reserve the right to call him. We can listen to him, you know, some kind of preliminary. We'll go and study it again, maybe call him again to come and present.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I think our concerns and our disappointment has been raised and we have well listened. So can I give you a chance then to answer to the procedures of the
committee? Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Member, the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Member. I think the committee has a right to be agreed or to be disagreed by us not sending our information kindly. And I think I want to apologize on the part of the for our non-submission. Our excuses, I think, will test you with the wellness outside the meeting in this regard. But we've endeavored to be prepared. This research report and tabling here comes at a time when the National Planning Commission has made some key recommendations about education. Equally, it follows on from our presentation of our annual report. We at that point also handed the printed version of the research itself to everyone. So this now is merely a presentation on what is contained in that report. It is equally beneficial to have followed on after the needed presentation because many of the issues have been raised there equally. That is going to be a challenge for the ERRC. The ERRC, in order to do its work, commissions a number of research, and over time, we've engaged in research in a number of areas. In respect of the current salary structure and its appropriateness, not just in mitigating the conditions of service of teachers, but equally in improving the quality of education. To this extent, in 2010, we commissioned a research and we appointed the Center for Education and Policy Development, the CEPP, to do this, conducting a literature review, examining documents like ERRC, looking at some international studies for comparison, interacting with our stakeholders and looking at what concerns the perception exists about our salary structure and system in public education and to make recommendations to us. The study found that there were distinct phases in the development of salaries and conditions from 1994 to the present. I must at the outset state that at the heart of the research team found that there is nothing fundamentally wrong with the current salary system, and the issue that needs to be addressed is progression and movement, and I'll deal with that in presenting this report. I'm on page 2, the next 2 slides. The first slide looks at the 4 distinct phases. In the 1990s, where problems of inequity and inequality existed in respect of gender and race, these issues the study found were broadly addressed, and that the salary system played an important role in raising qualification levels. The second phase is the 2000s period and beyond. The incentives related to qualification continued into this period after 2000, but the emphasis changed to performance, with various attempts to link pay to performance being introduced and then withdrawn to various implementation challenges. And those challenges become more evident as I go towards the tail end of the presentation. Third phase was 2008, and this is part of the entire endeavor of creating occupation-specific dispensation. And the agreements of 2008 sought to improve career opportunities, enable progression within the system, to reward good and excellent performance, and to provide incentives for experienced and capable teachers, with minimum and maximum salaries agreed in a complex system that allows for movement of educators between 221 notches. And that grading system was based on a 1% differential between 1 notch and 7. And the fourth phase is the 2009, the collective agreement number 4 of 2009 was concluded, and identified 5 areas that need to have been addressed within specific time frame. The proposed salary structure for public education, recognition of experience, salary progression and accelerated salary progression, the improvement of conditions of service for educators in REQ levels 10 to 12, and lastly, the issue of and it was important to make an analysis in determining the way forward for the ENR. The research team concluded that the salary ranges agreed to in 2008, which constitute the current system, are still appropriate, that the salary levels are broadly fair and reasonable. They do this, and I will show you later, even in terms of international comparison. Now, at the lower end, it is adequate to attract new entrants, which are one of the objectives of solidarity. And at the higher end, they are generous to provide an incentive for experienced educators not only to remain, but also to remain in the class. And that's the issue of career pathways. I want to page 3 of the first slide on top. The research found that the movement of teachers were not speedily of substantial. Although collective agreement of 2008 provided for the movement of educators, that is merely their view. And I must at this point say it does not reflect the view of the Department of Education, trade unions, career agencies. Those are their statements that they have made. They concluded that the intention of 2008 agreement was to ensure the teachers who perform well are able to move several notches a year through the available salary range. It's not that we were not, I think it is those provisions were not given sufficient time for implementation. One of the research findings is that the 1% movement that was proposed by the OLD agreement is slow, meaning that the maximum salaries agreed to are simply difficult to be attained over time. The real salary range for an RECUV 14 level over time. The real salary range for RECUV 14, that is the M plus 4 teacher, begins at around 152,000 to around 220,000. Whereas in theory, it's possible for an RECUV 14 educator to achieve earning levels of 344. This, they conclude, is unachievable in the average working life of the scheme. An historical analysis has shown variations in the application of OSD agreement in problems, and there was an average 3% difference in 2010 of educators who had the same profile as in 2008. Although there was general consistency of interpretation, in some provinces educators were high enough to, and they could not explain the discrepancy. It also established to the satisfaction of stakeholders in the ELRC that the changes since 2008 have been generally uniformly applied, with no specific problem standing out as having interpreted the agreement very differently to other problems. This is an important finding so as to enable the Council to work and build confidence in the current system. This was addressing allegations and perceptions of varied implementation. One of the perceptions of the OSD is that it is open to abuse. The research recommends that the better monitoring framework and system. It even makes the suggestion of the Department of Basic Education appointing a team and an accountant to be able to monitor the implementation. That's the gist. I'm going to go into the details of the agreement. Despite the research findings on the non-implementation of 3% for good performance and 6% for excellent or standard performance, collective agreement 4 of 2009 was concluded as a way of addressing unresolved matters that emanated from the 2008 OSD collective agreement. In respect of salary structure, the work on a proposed salary structure was concluded. Council appointed the CEPD to investigate the appropriateness of the current salary structure, and that's the review that we are undertaking. In terms of recognition of experience, the ERRC, the task team has completed its work and has made a report to the President of the Council. In respect of 4.3 salary progression, I'm on page 5, salary progression and accelerated salary progression. The 3% progression was paid to educators on the 1st of July 2009. The accelerated pay progression of 3% for good and 6% for excellent and outstanding performance was then terminated. This saving was utilized to pay a 3% progression for 2009 and annual pay progression of 1% thereafter. In terms of improvement, 4.4, improvement of conditions of service of education on RECUV 10 to 12, with effect from 1st of July 2009, all educators on RECUV 10 to 12, those are metric plus 1 year to metric plus 2 years, who were permanently appointed in line with the ELRC collective agreement number 4 of 2001, were moved to RECUV salary on June 13th was Stalin's birthday. And this one addressing issues of educators whose normal qualifications, as Mr. Pagliacci indicated, pre-1994, to be a teacher was below employment. On the issue of senior teachers, senior master teachers, all teachers who have been qualified for grade progression became senior and master teachers in line with the ERAS collective agreement 5 of 2006, which shall receive a one-stop cash bonus of 3% of the annual salary notch. This letter has been put out today. Teacher qualification. The teacher qualification profile has changed significantly and is still in the process of change. The ERRC started work to improve qualifications in 2000. The collective agreement number 8 of 2000, which provided funds for the upgrading of qualifications of unqualified and underqualified educators, which are now national professional diploma in education. The PASAR database shows that the percentage of educators whose qualifications below IQ meter in less than 3 years decreased from 28% as it was in 1998 to 4% in the year 2010. So there's been a significant improvement in the qualifications of educators. However, IQ 12 educators have now been placed onto RQB 13 for salary purposes. The RQB status have changed to RQB 13 without necessarily upgrading their actual qualification. This equally makes it difficult to precisely quantify the number of educators of RQB 12 and 13, or to make a distinction between them. The proportion of educators with RQB 13 qualifications have also seen a significant decrease with a corresponding increase in educators with RQB 14 qualifications, that is, Magister 4. The percentage of all educators, including all post levels, who are now qualified at RQB level 14 and above stands at 67%. This movement is not only important in relation to salary movement within the system, but it means that in future the general level of qualifications will be higher than in the education. Teacher salaries have increased as qualifications have increased. There is a substantial difference between the average salaries of post-level 1 educators on RQB 12, RQB 13, and RQB. From 1998 to 2007, RQB 13 and 14 educators received an average annual increase in terms of 2.7%. This was not consistent with the increase over time, and there were periods of real decline in salary, as well as periods of significant improvement. This is an education economist looking at the issue of the real increase of education. However, the implementation of ERRC collective agreements in 2008, that's the OSD, saw an average real annual increase in the period 2007 to 2010 of between 3 and 4%. In 2007, the average salary of the principal was 249,000 greater than the average salary of a post-level 1 classroom-based educator. By 2010, the difference has increased to 267. In respect of some comparative analysis, the research found that there is no salary system that has been developed in any other country that could easily be adopted in total intervention. Teacher salary systems take many forms and are the product of complex negotiations and historical evolution. The history of ERRC negotiations equally reflects the complexity that is mirrored in many other countries, and seemingly we've taken ideas from a whole range of countries over time and imported them into our therapy. But it is a different complexity to that found in any other country. A choice has to be made in relation to performance measurement and its link to salary. The ERRC stakeholders have to determine what it is they want to achieve, that is both the state and the trade union, and what needs to be incentivized, and develop a system based on those choices. Once the issue of being incentivized is agreed upon, a sound, fair, credible system is then needed to be agreed upon by the state and the educated trade union. Now, on the next page, 9, we do have an analysis done of the salary level, the minimum, and total, I explain the cost to company, and the maximum. And it looks at different levels of educators and their qualifications, starting from the teacher of M+1 and going all the way to a circuit manager. I think that's fairly self-explanatory. Cost to company is where, in addition to the basic, all other allowances, which generally average about cost minus 37%, is added to give you the total cost of the education. I'm on page 10. The RQ reported qualified classroom educators earn anywhere between, as I indicated earlier, 152,000 and 220,000 per year. In theory, the teacher can earn more than this amount, but only a small number do. That's the analysis that they have done. Normally, a figure of 37% is added, now there is an issue of the cost of the company. In relation to the market, a salary of 200,000 is competitive for persons starting off as educators. And this is in comparison to other professions. Whereas 280,000 could be considered too low for the experienced professional. And I think that's what everybody has over time affirmed, that whereas teachers earn higher at the beginning, after 6 to 8 years, they earn far less than their colleagues in other professions. In comparison to other professionals, these salaries appear quite low. Normally a professionally qualified engineer, architect or accountant could be expected to earn more. However, teaching working hours, for example, both the working day and school closures are considered, are lower than those of other professions, and part of the package for teachers is also the pattern of working time. So there are a variety of factors that over time limited teachers from earning the equivalent of their colleagues in other professions. While the case can be made that teachers should be paid more, such motivations have to be made in the context of the very severe constraints. And given the current economic crisis the world is facing, including our country, an even stronger motivation has to be made. The case for additional teachers to reduce class sizes or to provide additional support in socially disadvantaged schools, depending on learning and teaching support materials, libraries, resource centers, and so on, can and are being made in competition to just increase the salary.
Can I interrupt you? Can I tell you please now? Yes, we are interested. And I can feel even need a workshop on this so that we can understand the structure. We are talking of these 221 notches, of which I think all the members of the committee need to be clear. We'll need a day when you can even draw up and see on the board so that you can have a clear understanding of what is the training talk of the teacher climbing the ladder one notch ahead of here. But really, the time is against us. Can you take up to it? Can I give you 10 minutes after I'm 25 past
12 so that members can get a chance before, because we're going to change at 2, so they still need to prepare themselves for that. Can I take just another 10 minutes, please?
Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not going to go into detail, and I'm going to move, I think, to Bahab. The one thing that is exorbitant is the whole issue of funding constraints. Okay. And that was one of the factors that we look at why the measures linked to pay were instituted and removed over time, okay, to compensate, and funding has been a significant problem. Second, the research suggests the stakeholders might want to revise the whole issue of providing teachers who perform good or excellent back with accelerated progression, that is linking performance to pay. That's the issue that was the 2008 collective agreement dealt with, that they're saying could be an area that we need to look at. The other issue is on professionalism, and I think they've explored the issue of professionalism and they make some recommendations. And amongst the key is that on page 15 in the slide at the bottom, the research strongly recommends that professionalizing teaching should become one of the key objectives in informing the bargaining agenda of the ENRC for the next coming period. And there is a need for parties to agree on the pillars, on the key pillars of their profession, so that the discussion becomes a focused one and can unite and mobilize teachers around a common agenda. So recognizing qualifications and good performance and enabling career progression linked to experience and specialization are key steps towards professionalizing teaching. In relation to performance, although performance-related pay has been a challenge since the early 1990s in both South Africa and elsewhere, it still remains a challenge today. And the National Planning Commission recommendation is clear in that regard and poses an issue that must be addressed. In that period, the whole issue of teacher performance management system. In that respect, we can report, with the study note, is that there is a de-linking of development, assessment for development, and assessment for performance. And IQMS is going to be replaced by what we will call the teacher appraisal system. And I'll leave with that a little later. In respect of key recommendations, I'm going to go towards the end. And deal with the issue of qualification. There's been a strong move to look at making REQ V14 the minimum qualification in education. What the research proposed is that further discussion is needed on what constitutes an appropriate qualification. But the aim will be to move from REQ level to qualifications that are relevant to specific learning and teaching areas. Consistently good performance, the aim would be to recruit teachers to the post who have demonstrated commitment and achieved good results in the subject matter or teaching area. It may not be necessary for them to be the top excellent performers, but they should be performing consistently well. In respect to specialist expertise and competence, the aim should be to recruit teachers who demonstrated a particular ability to teach in a particular subject or develop practice in a particular teaching area. This expertise could be measured in terms of IQMS or by means of a voluntary test or exam. In the slide that I skipped or in the research, the comparative study will show that in Malaysia there is a requirement to take tests in order to be recognized for progression. The research team found that there is nothing fundamentally wrong with the current system. The issue that needs to be addressed is progression and movement, as I indicated earlier. The one immediate way of speeding up movement is to increase, they propose, the value differential between notches, which is currently from 1% to 1.5. The proposed new system, they will reduce the number of notches. In addition, it is recommended the ENRC revise both performance-related pay and teaching and learning specialist posts agreed to in 2008. In the longer term, it recommends that the ENRC gives attention to learning and teaching as a profession, as this is integrally linked to the recommendations set out in the report, implementing the spirit and intention of OSD agreement of creating alternative career paths in the form of teaching and learning posts or senior teaching and learning specialists who will remain in the classroom and no issue of performance rate. Subsequent to this report, the parties to the council have agreed to review the findings and accept the relevant information to inform their discussions and engagement on the salaries and conditions of education, in line with drawing on the residual matters that emanate from collective agreement 2 of 2008. I've just summarized the report. I do not speak in any great detail, but I think that the report is self-explanatory and contained. It does not in any way mean that the parties have agreed to anything specific. This is merely the work done by the CEC. Over the next few months, we get an indication of the attitude of the state as well as the trade union. But in large measure, it has already canvassed some ideas and thinking from the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Cullen.
Mr. The friend entities and units, just give me the date, honorable members, where we can have, maybe you are in the hall, a reunion, where everybody will be there, all these stakeholders, because you see that in one way or the other, they cannot function in silos. We need teachers to work. Some of them will say we are not getting enough money. We need everyone to be there. I think we need to come up with a day once in a while where everybody will be in to try and debate these issues, point each other, but at the end of the day, surely I think we can come up with a solution. But can I give the chance to the members, to the honourable members, to interrogate the process we have just got, comments, questions in whatever way. And okay, can I set that aside now? I've noted Honorable Smile, Honorable Dikogu, Honorable Shwana, in that order, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I've noted the sort of difference, huge difference between the salary of the principal and that of a level one educator. Now, the study has sort of indicated that, but my question is what are the pros and the cons of this situation? You know, in effect, for the teaching, for the salary structure as a whole, but also for the level one teacher, because obviously the cons for the principal is clear. Of the pros for the cons for the principle. Then I see that the CEPD study, they have done the report. Now, my question is whether there was a tender and how did they get the job? And what is the link between ELRC and CEPD?
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, the initial reaction, very informative, that is. I just want to check one thing. The idea of having moved educators RQB 10 to 12 automatically up to RQB 18 without them having improved their qualification. I want to know, with the benefit of hindsight, how has this helped the system? But also linking to that, and I seem to remember that in the first collective agreement, OSD, the 2008 one, it was agreed that come the year 2013, the minimum qualification for an educator would be RQB 14, in other words, matric plus 4 years. And just as an aside, on the 8th of October, I was talking to teachers elsewhere, and they seem to have forgotten this part, particularly those who have been moved automatically without improving. That a few years down the line, they will be regarded as underqualified. But then bring back the issue of RPS, because it was very strong when the collective agreement was signed. And again, I support the principle that the fact that you are RQB 14 does not always mean you teach better than the one who's RQB 12. It cannot always be a fair measure. But the idea was that this indicator would be taken, while others would be quite improving their qualifications, they would be taken some form of RPL, recognition of priority, as a way of moving them, those who qualify to be moved. How far with this RPL? Because 2013 is just around the corner. I think the other thing is just maybe that's this concern. I don't know. I mean, collective agreements are that people agree on them. But I'm just looking at a situation where, for example, in 2006, you signed this collective agreement number 5. You want to improve career pathing, you introduce senior teacher, master teacher, and then you introduce accelerated progression. You reinforce it in 2008 by having an even faster progression for those who are doing better, which I thought was something very good. And then you introduce a teaching and learning specialist, senior teaching and learning specialist. And then in 2009, you nullify all those things. Effectively say, no, there is no more accelerated progression. I'm trying to understand the logic. If the idea was that we want to reward excellence, and we sign those resolutions, then we finally say, well, we are not doing it anymore. What does it do to the system? But I also know the pain that people went from school to school or wherever, explaining how this thing is going to work. Just when people say, now we understand, we come back and say, ah, not anymore. And now I see the proposal now says, bring it back. What does it do to the system? Because I think it demotivates. It's particularly those who are happy. Well, those who are not happy with you will celebrate and say, we are all the same. I think it's okay for now, Richard.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think my colleague spoke of most of the things that I wanted to speak about. But I just want to check with the team from the ERAS. When are South African teachers going to be paid with in all fairness? I'm not sure whether it's a philosophical question or not. But without comparing them to other countries, South African teachers, definitely, you compare both, you know that they're not paid well. Is there a conscious move, a conscious plan to ensure that our teachers are paid well in this particular country? Because teachers are actually, whatever other professions that we're having, the teachers are the foundation, is my understanding of what to teach. central. So that our teachers are not well paid, we know this. And it doesn't matter how we come here and colors or whatever, but the teachers are not well paid. Is there a conscious move to pay these teachers well in this country? Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. I'm going to leave some questions for the department to ask. Let me just start off firstly in relation to the differences between the salary levels. If I take you to that diagram I have on salaries, the cost to company, bear in mind that the system makes provision for a classroom teacher to become a teaching and learning specialist or a senior teaching and learning specialist. And the idea there is that the teacher has an alternate career path, but it's based on performance and competence. Okay? And that's where the debate equally on the qualification that must accompany that. Then that would, in a sense, remove the what they will call the obvious difference between a level one educator at the lowest pay and the principal. Okay, so if you take the master teacher M plus 4, not 120, you will see there that there is the minimum and the maximum. The maximum is 344. Now, if you take the principal, the maximum for the principal is 344 basic, 471. The principal, then that one is the minimum 387, maximum is 582, 798. Now that reduces, okay, over time. But if you look at it, it's possible that gap was reduced by teachers who progressed and remained. So it's not that it's meant to maintain that distinction. But obviously there will be a difference between, from a hierarchical point of view, a salary point of view, between different levels. But the teacher can be level one, but earn as much as a deputy principal or a principal at a lower level. So somebody will explain in vacant UK if that's not an option. Secondly, in relation to the tender process, yes, in compliance with the PFMA, we will have to comply, and given that the way visitor spent more than $500,000, a due process was followed in respect of the procurement of that service. And ultimately, the three parties that are involved in the council would have received the various applications, shortlisted them, and then made a determination who was the preferred service provider. And finally, the final service provider chosen was the CEP to conduct this particular in respect of the whole issue of, salary progression, REQV, then the whole issue of the minimum that has been raised, and the whole issue of RPL for qualification. The one thing we must distinguish, you can get RPL for salary purposes, but to get RPL for qualification will depend on the education institution and the individual. And no collective agreement in the ERRC can compel an education institution on how to recognize the qualification of an educator in general. So I think that distinction needs to be made. The ERRC only have competence to deal with for salary purposes, but for real qualification, then that just with the individual in relation to a particular institution that would perhaps give recognition to some prior experience. And I think that needs to be understood. And even when we talk of RPL, in the EMRC, there are significant limitations that will exist. I'm going to ask somebody to cover the other areas that are not dealt with. The last one is where teachers are going to be paid, that's a question for government. But what I'll draw your attention to is that the research is saying that even when we look at our country in relation to other professions, the first issue is that teachers, as I indicated, start off earning better than any other profession, generally speaking, whether it's accountants, etc. But the only issue is the progression after time. But when they do the comparative study, it's only the Philippines that seems to invest, that pay their teachers higher than the rest. I think our own ELRC studies, when we did comparative visits to countries, equally have shown us that we are quite well paid for a country of our particular type of country which we come to the world. So, but that question I'm fully open for the past.
I will answer the questions that deal with the issues around taking from 2006 and 2008 and what the collective agreement did and then what 2009 did and basically why it is that we've reversed what appeared to be something good and that was allowing fast accelerated progression. The answers to that lie in the dilemma about a perception that teachers didn't get recognition of experience in the 2008 OEC. Now, there was money allocated for recognition of experience in 2008. But in that round of negotiations, it was felt that on the side of labor, in particular, that they required that money to be spread differently across all teachers rather than allocate to those who had years of experience. And so in 2008 they did not get recognition of experience as was received in the rest of the public service following education OEC. When the new administration took over, there was a need to take and resolve the whole matter of OEC quickly because there was a lot of unhappiness about the unevenness of implementation of it. In that round, OEC education had a second bite at the OEC. So they were the second OEC, which the rest of the public service needed. And the main reason they got that was because there was a strong view on the side of labor that they wanted recognition of experience. Now, in a way, because we didn't have that kind of funding available, we had to then explain, you know, how can we achieve this? And in that discussion, there was a trade-off to say, we will forfeit the accelerated pay, and we will forfeit the 1.5% difference in notch. We have the 1% notch, and in 2008 it went up to 1.5. So they would forfeit that 0.5% difference. And going forward in the year, that money can be used to offset the cost in lieu of recognition of experience. Now, in 2009, we did not have that money in the budget. So what happened was Cabinet gave us $2.3 billion out of an amount that was required. We needed $4.6 billion, but we only got $2.3 billion. And going forward in the budget, it would mean that you're going to over expenditure, but as in the year you don't do the accelerated pay and you don't give the 0.5, you will then try to see how you work your budget. And that's currently what's happening in education. We are still trying to manage the budget like that. And that's the reason why we have, you know, appear to have backtracked. From the side of government, we never said we didn't believe or still adhere to the principle of accelerated pay and that it has to be linked to performance in a classroom. It was just that the unfortunate part of that trade-off was in that circumstance you know, we solved it, the problem like that. it was not without a context, and at the time it was a clear need to stabilize on the issues of obesity, and so that's how it came about. The budgets were very bad in our expenditure sometimes. If you get the personnel expenditure budgets and you have a look at that, you will see the evidence of what we are explaining. They are all our expense, and the reason for that mainly is about the obesity and the conscious decision that that's what we were going to do in 2019. The break even year that we indicated at that time when we did the calculation was around about 2017. Give or take. You can do your budget well, and you can even it out. It can happen earlier, but at that time in the calculations in 2009, and the unions were aware of that, they understood that, and they wanted the recognition of experience to be implemented rather than accelerated by this, and that's where we find ourselves. Around the issues of teachers being well paid, I think it's time that we start sending a different message out, because this is for a long time the public image is about teachers are not well paid. And so everyone, if you keep hearing that, you start to believe, but you don't look at actually what is all these years do on your salary. You just keep believing that, you know what, I'm not well paid. And I think we need to start getting that message out to say that comparatively speaking, we're not saying that we're the world's best earners. The issue is firstly, we are teachers paid. I mean, if you look at the comparison between engineers, accountants, teachers, and what is required to be an engineer, and what is required to be an accountant, and what is required to be a teacher, then are we talking about equals? And in the world of those careers, do they earn equally? I think that's the first starting point. Rather than say teachers don't earn the same as engineers, because clearly engineers can earn a lot of money. It's a high skill. I'm not saying teaching is not a high skill. I'm a teacher myself. But I think there is recognition that, you know, to get accepted in the university to do engineering is different from getting accepted to be a teacher going to do BA again, doing an engineering degree. It's two different requirements to get accepted. So it's an unequal comparison. And I think the important thing is not about that comparison necessarily, but it's about how do we fit into the picture in the rest of the world earning our teachers. And what the research is saying to us is that when you do that comparison, actually we are not bad off. We are actually better off than many other countries. And I think that's the message we are getting out. And then to say to teachers as well, I mean, you know, it's very hard for us from government. There are lots of, I mean, I'm talking to members of parliament, so you understand the issue. When you compare all the things that we require in education and where you put all the money, if you keep loading all the money on personnel expenditure, it's going to come at a cost of the other things. So we, at some point, are going to ask ourselves, what is the priority? Given that this is what the findings are saying going forward, what is reasonable that we can give teachers that will make their conditions better, and does that only lie within salary? Should it not be other things that you consider that does make a difference? And maybe that's also part of what we need to pursue. Trying to get a message out that the answer is not only in the cash and on your salary across the board, but to match it to what the planning department is saying around linking it to performance and the extent to which that can have room for additional remuneration, maybe the way in which you can increase the wage bill. But then it's clearly not a one size fits all, and there's a clear motivation of the funding that will then be allocated for those levels.
And this will add the last part, and that is the performance-based issue. What the research is showing, there are various options that you can reward the teacher for his or her own individual performance, or you can reward the school. Now, these are various approaches in various countries. Or you can find a combination between rewarding the school and the individual teachers that do perform. But what is clear it is the distinction between those who do not perform and those who do perform. So there are choices to be made. There's no one good example in the world that you can say has worked the best. So there's a variety of experiences. So we have choices to make. So in the months to come, we'll have to debate those choices and see what is it appropriate. There's a strong argument, given the large number of dysfunctional schools we have, that we should also look at rewarding schools that show an improvement and the teachers in those schools that make the effort. Okay. So we have some unique problems that we'll have to take into account when we're developing what is called the linking pay to performance issue. There are countries that de-link incentives and pay. So we're going to have to debate those kinds of issues. But what is clear, we're going to have to find some solution quite urgently that helps us not just to put more money in teachers' pockets, but to help us turn around our poor performance. That's at the heart of the issue. So whatever solutions we find, we must measure over 3 years or 4 years. We'll never be able to measure in 1 year to see what impact it's going to have.
Thank you very much for those reports. Honorable members, our colleagues from the department, I know we didn't do much justice to this report, and there are still a lot of discussions that need to take place. And you know, Mr. Governor, that we rely on you. Well, later they say we did not get any strikes and whatever. You know, really, when we touch teacher salaries, we are teaching, even when we are touching and working what is happening down there, you know that you are the pillar. We rely on the LRP to take control of whatever in connection with the salaries. So this is a very important topic that we didn't give much time to, and we need these discussions really to take place there too. How do we make sure, how do we bring back professionalism? It cannot rely solely on your unit, but you know that we can touch on those things and whatever. So we're promising, we have been talking here, we are going to make sure that we have an open day where we bring LRC together with the department so that we can look, go back to the report, even on the developments that you should have gone through, on the findings that you have already just come up with, so that we can take this matter forward. And let me thank everybody who has been here. I think our meeting has been good. It has opened so many areas, our eyes in so many areas, and hopefully the discussions that you have had in today's meeting is going to have an impact on the delivery of our education, so that our children benefit from the education system that we have as a country. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Kavenda. Thank you very much, Mr. Faber. Honorable members, we were supposed to have to discuss the report that is in front of us, but can I just plead you that we shelve it for today? I know it's late now. In the next meeting, it should be scheduled in the local. We'll go through the report on that day. Otherwise, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.